The Survivor Specialist, Phil and Blake, are back, and today we are digging deeper into episode number 4. We are joined by Peridium, and we're going to dive into yesterday's tribe swap and what Jeff calls new era uncertainty. Haven't heard from Blake in a little bit here, as last week Philip Solomon was here and Blake was out working, being a productive member of society, and couldn't make it here at the time that we had scheduled, which is fine. So we're going to get pretty much 2 weeks of Blake here. We have Peridium, which is always a pleasure. And we're going to be talking about the prop bet game here, which, Peridium, you and I are absolutely killing because you were the guest for the prop bet this year. And you and I are doing great right now. I know we never, ever, ever bring it up again after we mention it, but we're actually killing it. So we're going to talk about all that. I'm going to start off, though. I called this episode New Era Uncertainty and Tribe Swaps. And I'm going to start off by going on a bit of a monologue here before I even let Peridium say hi, before I even let Blake say anything. I just want to do this because I think it's going to set the tone for this podcast. So Mike Bloom tweeted yesterday or this morning, whatever it was. He said that was the first time since March 4th, 2020, that we had an official two-tribe challenge, one tribe facing another. Now, we have seen teams get split off, but it's not acknowledged by Jeff, by production, that they are tribes. We are told they merged, and now it's two different teams. So this is the first time that we had two tribes actually acknowledged as tribes competing head-to-head in an immunity challenge since March 4th of 2020. This brings me to my point here. Jeff Probst said in this episode, he loves when people feel uncertain. He wants the uncertainty to be super, super high. So since 2020, we have had nothing but three tribe challenges and individual challenges. There has not been a single two-tribe challenge until last night, which is 5 years, 5.5 years later, 5 years, 7 months later, okay? And I just want to start off by saying that, and then I'm going to get into something with the first 16 seasons of Survivor, but I'm going to let you all get in here first. But I'm going to bring up a point with the first 16 seasons of Survivor and say why we're having such an issue with the new era and why last night, even when we got the swap to two tribes, so many people are coming out feeling dissatisfied. So that's my opening monologue. My camera didn't pop out this time, unlike last night. So that's a good start. We're here. Peridium, you go first because Blake's going to go in on this shit. So you go first, Peridium.
Hey, what's up? Glad to be here. Thank you, Phil. I know we did the prop bet a month ago and that one pretty well. I did check actually to see how I was doing. And I was nailing a few of them. Some of them pretty bad at, but you know, looking pretty good. Yeah, I didn't realize that Tyson Apostle getting voted out in Winners at War was the last time we were going to see two tribes in the pre-merge. Technically, I'm like, okay, you could say the Mergatory has like two tribes, but they're really not tribes. They're more like groups. Mm-hmm. And it just does not hit the same whatsoever. And same with the post-merge, like rewards, if they split them up into two groups or whatever. That's not the same thing. We all know it. It's not the same. Yeah, I miss it. I miss the variations. I've sort of said a lot about my opinions on the new era over the I review every season once it's finished in its totality and try to like slot it into the timeline of the show. And there are things I've liked more as we get later into the 40s. There's a lot of things that I'm like, I'm just saying the same thing over and over again, where I started to feel like I was just pushing the boulder up and it was just going back down every year. And I just started getting sick of it. And I just started saying, like, time is a flat circle. We're back. See you guys for the next new era season. You know, I'll try to get whatever juice I can out of a new season and try to enjoy whatever pros they bring. Some of the people are interesting. Sometimes the gameplay can be interesting or exciting or in the moment. I'm like, oh, shit, what are they going to do? Or, oh, Caleb's shot in the dark landed. That's cool. I mean, it's a little lucky. You know, it doesn't hit as hard as Wentworth. Will not count. But it's fun. But, yeah, I wish that they were my biggest issue comes in the way of the two tribe versus three tribe, in that we haven't seen such stale format for the seasons of the show repeatedly one after the other for 9 straight seasons, probably 10, even though we're getting 8 per tribe next year next year. And I went like, this is incredibly repetitive in that we're getting the same exact three tribes, same journeys, like relatively the same exact outcomes, 6 tribes, couple of votes lost. It's chaotic, but it's short term, and it doesn't feel as good when it's, I know exactly what we're going to get every single year, every single season. And I'm like, in the moment, it's not bad on if you isolate just the season, like season 49 with 4 episodes. But when you look at the last 8 seasons, it doesn't feel anything. It's the same again and again and again. And that drives me crazy because they're like, we don't want anyone to be able to hide. And we want to have like uncertainty and unpredictability. And I'm like, one of my favorite things going into a season, especially as a viewer, but I have to imagine even as a player, is that you don't know what you're going to get. Two tribes, three tribes, maybe four tribes, maybe one tribe. You don't know what twist you're going to get exactly. But in the case of New Era, you do know what you're going to get. You're going to get beware advantages. You're going to get a weird idol search that has some weird wacky, you know, like whatever. You're going to get journeys. It's the same. And it's been the same. And the producers have consistently just had the same format from season 41 to 49, just the same. And they've never varied. Whereas they used to vary, not just in location, but in how episode to episode, the dynamics broke out. Are we going to have a twist? Are we going to have a swap? Are we going to have whatever? And sometimes they cut it to how the cast was playing, like in Palau, they didn't do a merge or whatever. And they just sort of let it ride out. And sometimes they did things like ad hoc, just random. But in 41 to 49, I felt like it is the most, unfortunately, like budget era. Yeah. And that has, they have just like, we have created a three tribe format. It works with our twists. And we're just going to hit it on repeat again and again and again and again. And so that's been like my biggest frustration, which is why I'm like, I would love to get to two tribes. And then we could have a two tribe version of the New Era and a three tribe version. Try four tribes, try one tribe, just try to mix it up a little bit. And one other thing was that Christian a couple years ago went on a podcast and talked about how two tribes with a swap is infinitely more interesting than three tribes with no swap or even with a swap, because of the fact that you get more people per episode getting involved in the episode in the game. And also it cross pollinates with more people when you have a two tribes versus three. And that's just going to lead to more storylines, more relationships building off of each other. When one tribe doesn't go to tribal council for seven episodes, it's like, we don't know anything. We don't know much about them. And they end up like every other season in the New Era has had that happen. And that's just not good. Like, it doesn't create a good, big, cohesive picture for me. I want to see all players go to tribal in the pre-merge. I want to see players all get their hands dirty in the pre-merge. I want to see storylines develop. But Hina, for example, has gotten very little going on. And still, even in the swap, they still after four episodes. So anyway, this is another rant you went on, but if you're throwing the ball to me for a minute, I've been covering this show for 8 years, watching it adamantly for 15. I got a lot of thoughts, so I can take it in a lot of directions. But anyway, just want to tee that up for Blake if he wants to.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. And I am going to give this over to Blake for a second, let him get his before I say what I want to say about the early seasons. But I was saying on my Patreon episode today, I was saying Survivor used to be the cutting edge of creativity and the cutting edge of reality TV and the cutting edge of just TV in general. And even down to the way the two tribe swap happened last night, Will brought this up on our podcast last night. He said they did this in the worst way they could have. They had a prime opportunity to easily have three from Hina, three from Uli, one from whatever, Kella. Yeah. There's your seven. If you want to make it even men and women or four men on one tribe, four women on the other, you can do that. You can do a schoolyard pick. You can do anything. And instead they chose to just make it random. And now we're in a situation where it's very obvious who's on the bottom of every tribe, Matt or Jason going home. It doesn't matter because the other one's going to go next week. And with Jason staying, we know with how small his edit is, he hits the merge. He's not going to go very far, or at least he can't win because I don't know anything about him. So Blake, you haven't spoken in 2 weeks, and now you've had to sit here for 8 minutes and 45 seconds listening to two other people talk. I know you don't like doing that. So what's going on?
No, I'm learning patience, and I'm learning how to just let things roll off my shoulders or whatever. But not for Survivor. It is something where you're like, okay, Jeff, this is what you're telling me. You can trick an 8-year-old. You can trick a 15-year-old. You can trick a 67-year-old. You can trick all those people, but you can't trick me. Of the uncertainty of the New Era hasn't really been a thing since 41 or 42, because that introduced the format that we know and love, or love to hate, or hate to love, whatever. But like, we know that there's going to be three tribes for this amount of time until we get here, where we split up into two fake tribes and it's earn the merge. Like, if he says something about how uncertain earn the merge is in two episodes, I'm gonna roll my eyes even harder. Like, the only thing that was uncertain about this season is we thought this guy died of a snake bite for about 13 seconds, and then he didn't, but he couldn't come in. And that's going to throw off you contestants, right? And the contestants are like, no, he's okay. Like, we're down to play Survivor. And you're like, oh, okay. How about a Swap Tribe to 2? And like, it's so funny to me of like, that's what we call a Survivor fake out. We made production put all three of these challenge things out, and then we split you into two tribes. And you know what? Screw you guys. You guys are going back to the blue beach that doesn't even have fire, just because we decided red and yellow we went with blue buffs for this one. And you're like, that's not a smart decision. Like, those people didn't deserve to like get reset to day zero. And there's no, I think, what's a thing you would want to avoid if you're a Survivor producer? Don't be season 14 haves versus have nots, because all it does is take you to like, this isn't fun to watch because this tribe keeps losing over and over and over again. And like, Disaster Tribe has been, I think, the hottest button topic for everybody in the podcast sphere of Disaster Tribes are no longer fun to watch. And I think that's something when Jeff talks about uncertainty or creativity or moving forward, like, I think the three tribe format became the most novel thing because we watched seven tribes without it happening. Whenever All-Star said there's going to be three tribes, we go, I have no idea how this is going to work. Is two tribes going to go to, is it going to be one? Are they going to be allowed to work against each other? How are those tribes going to, it's no longer a novel concept when we've seen every permutation of it. And now that we haven't seen a two tribe format, it is almost like swung back the pendulum so far the other way of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to just see absolute hatred, Lamina versus Kasaya all over again, of like, there isn't a middle ground of like, you're Kele, well, we kind of like you because you've been having such a bad time. Wouldn't it be more fun if it was Uli versus Hina the whole time, where it's like, yeah, you're a red person, I hate your freaking guts, and someone makes a cardinal mistake like Cochran on South Pacific and gives the other side the game, and like, oh, maybe it's not as many people, but like, it's clear that Uli is about to just run through this merge of like, yeah. I know nothing about y'all, but I know everything about Rizzo. I know everything about Savannah. Jawan has talked a whole bunch for somebody who I thought was going home probably round right now. They have not said a bad word about Nate in 2 months. And now we're getting Sage is talking something besides bodily functions. Like, we're making her, and then Shannon is about to be like a villain out of nowhere, where like, when she goes sometime in the next 3 days because she's on the wrong side, we're going to be like, yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is where I think all of this, right? Normally these are, Peridium's been on this podcast a bunch. We're much more conversationally than this. Obviously, we're always more conversationally. It just feels like this was like the get on your soapbox and start talking. And I want to bring this point up now because I want to go to the creativity of it and the uncertainty and really highlight this, because people will try to make the argument that when we see things like this, we're getting old school Survivor and we're just complaining to complain. And, you know, like some of the people who are really big new era advocates or fans or whatever, MC, who says new era is better than old school. That's what happens when you don't watch the first 40 seasons of Survivor. You like the new era more than the old era. That's what David thought too. But for me, I want to bring this up because it really highlights how non-creative we've gotten, how certain things are. And look, I'm doing this rant. I'm doing this complaining. We're all doing this complaining the day after we just watched two tribes for the first time in the new era. But here's why I want to highlight this, right? Because I want to highlight how it used to be creative, because this was done in the dumbest way they could have, by just picking random rocks, right? I want to talk about the first 16 seasons of Survivor. I guess, you know what? We're going to talk about the first 17 seasons.
17 is better because you get Gabon in there. So
we get Gabon. So we're going to go 17. Season 1 was two tribes of 8. Season 2 was two tribes of 8. Season 3 was two tribes of 8 with a tribe swap where three people from each side got pretty much screwed and had to go to the other tribe. They didn't know that was coming. Season 4, two tribes of 8, but also a random tribe swap. First time we ever saw that. So through 4 seasons, we have 3 different things. Season 5, picked by the oldest people there. Tribes were picked. Season 6, men versus women. Season 7, you could say that's two tribes of 8. And then all of a sudden the outcast twist happens. I'd say that's more uncertain, although it's stupid. Season number 8, three tribes of six, so we can get to 18 people. Season number nine, now it's two tribes of nine. First time we've ever seen that, 18 people. Okay, season 10, they all live on one beach to start. Then they pick the tribes. Two people go home right away. 20 people, crazy. Season 11, Bobby, John, and Stephanie show up. Season 12, four tribes of four. Season 13, four tribes of five. Season 14, pick the tribes, uneven numbers. Sylvia goes to Exile Island right off the bat. And we have haves versus have-nots. Season 15, whoa, this is pretty normal. Two tribes of eight. We haven't seen that in a while. Season 16, 20 people, two tribes of 10. First time we've ever seen it. Fans versus favorites. Season 17, pick the tribes. That's creativity. That is different. That's not even getting into idols, how tribe swaps happened. Obviously, in Gabon, we see them rank the players, and Bob's ranked third and gets picked next to last and then ends up going on to win the game. We see all this cool stuff, all this different creativity, and everything in the new era. Every time they do a tribe swap, which we love tribe swaps, but every time they do a tribe swap, it is, all right, pick a buff. Let's be random. Let's be uncertain. It takes the fun out of it. It takes the joy out of it. And so last night, we see it get to two tribes for the first time. And Will and I sat here and all we could think was how we could have done it better. And honestly, it's not because I'm definitely not nearly as smart as Will is when it comes to creating these game designs and stuff like that. He does it for a living. But this isn't hard stuff to come up with. This is simple. And when you're presented with there's a tribe of six, there's a tribe of six, and there's a tribe of two, do something creative to make it so that it's even, so that we're not sitting here going, look, I've already done my predictions and power rankings for this weekend. I have Eric Reichenbach on 11 a.m. on Sunday. And I'm telling you all right now, Jason will be my number. What are we at? To the final 13? He will be my number 12, not my 13, because I think they're going to do a puzzle at the end of the challenge this time, because they didn't do a puzzle at the end of last one, so he'll win it. And that means my 13 is Shannon, because Shannon's going to go home. That's how it's been set up. 12 is Jason, and 11 is Sage, because it's one of those three people going home. They had an opportunity, but they don't want to get creative with it, and they don't want to do anything really all that exciting. And that's what bothers me coming in. We're 17 minutes in. I know it's been a bitch fest, which can be tiring to listen to, but that is where I'm at right now with how this is operating. He said the words, we love when you feel uncertain. I haven't felt uncertain in any of the new era seasons the way I did in the first 17 seasons of the show.
Hey, season 18 was the first one that I got into the show with. And they voted two people out in the first like 15 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, to be fair, they tricked them and they actually didn't vote them out. But that was great. We got Sandy and her paces. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I would take that every day over like Sweat and Savvy. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And when you put it like that, I'm like, wow, you're really running through it. But I'm like, you know, it does drive the point home that it's just, this has been my biggest frustration. I know I just said it, but like the format, they created a format to fit whatever Jeff is trying to do to fit on Fiji with 26 days, to accommodate 26 days, to accommodate staying in Fiji forever. And he kind of just said, like, we're just going to get wacky with these weird twists. But then he's kind of just kept the same twist for now nine seasons. To be fair, he's gotten rid of some of the bad ones. I think the really bad ones, the earlier ones, because people hated them, which is great. Like, I appreciate that. But that's like taking us back to breaking even. And in the first 17, 18 seasons, you could say we weren't breaking it, but we took it for granted. You know, we were taking it for granted. Now we're kind of like, give us something normal. I'll take a tribe swap and I'll like it. Even though I'm like, damn, they could have made this more interesting. If they made it a 3-3-1 with this episode four, if they'd made it where it was, like there was a tribe captain. I saw somebody suggest this tribe captain for red and blue, red and yellow. They each pick one from the other tribe and they have to pick one from the opposite tribe. And then Alex and Sophie just get randomly split. So it's a 3-3-1. That to me is way more interesting. Why did they pick the people they picked to be on their tribe? What happens? Who does Sophie and Alex go with? That would be a two episode storyline that would carry us through this episode and next episode. And it's interesting. And maybe they change it up. Maybe Sophie goes with the Reds tonight. And then next week they go back to Tribal Council and maybe things change. I don't know. But instead, we got a 4-2-1. So I'm like, damn, the two don't matter. Sophie doesn't matter. Alex doesn't matter. Sage and Shannon don't really matter. That's six people with 14 don't matter. And we got 2 weeks of this at a minimum. I'm like, that's really unfortunate. That's just so unfortunate. And they could have easily made it not that way. And I'm not saying like force it to be that way. Just like in this particular case, But I guess they had like, they don't really do that very often. They don't, they haven't done that in forever. I don't remember the last time
they picked the tribes for the
like Vanuatu did that on season 9, where they said you have to alternate picking somebody from the men versus women's tribe. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So they're kind of making it even. There's going to be tension, tribe numbers. Unfortunately, they did it with an odd amount, I think, or something. So it was weird. But yeah, I just thought, oh, this could be really interesting with a 3-3-1. Oh, they're leaving up the chance. Even a 5-1-1 would have been more interesting. We did get unlucky. Like, this was definitely a bit of an unlucky breakdown. Yeah. It could have been something better. But I don't know.
Anyway. I kind of want to jump in right here because the first minute and a half of the show, we're showing a lot of iconography of, like, shipwreck. But there's not a theme because it's New Era. It's just 49. There is no theme. Yeah. This season could have been called Survivor Shipwrecked, and it's in Fiji. Who cares? But then we could have had like, oh, it's time for the tribe swap. What would have happened in a shipwrecked scene of like, we're going to have a challenge. There's a chest out there, but it's an individual challenge at what are we at 14? The two people that find the chest are actually team captains. And now we can have a tribe swap with a different thing because of the theme of our season, a theme that's been different from 38 because 38 was more Asian influence, even though it's all Fiji. It's very weird that they're spending probably hundreds of thousands of dollars on the tribal council of look how different it looks. But then we're not going to talk about shipwrecks. It's clearly shipwrecked. There's an entire ship wrecked in tribal council. Like, why is this not coming around for anything else? Are the players even confused about, like, why is it all shipwrecked? Why is there a ship here on our logo and then the 49 is rope? Do I need to be paying attention to rope in this game? Is that what's going to where the idols are going to be? And you're just like, all of this could be incorporated. This is what y'all used to do. I was going to mention the Vanuatu stuff of, like, there's been at least two times. I think the other time was Thailand, where it's like the oldest people are the ones who are the smartest. So Sarge and what's your name? Scout. Yeah. You guys are the tribal people. Like that is how we've done tribe swaps in the past to make it instead of being random. Is it some kind of fair? No. You could have voted out Scout and been the oldest one, Leanne or whoever. But like, no, I guess it would have been Twyla. Like you maybe had the chance to change this. Like, I think that's some fun board game stuff when you're like, who's the person who's been to Thailand most recently? It's like, what? Nobody. And it's like, well, who's been closest to Thailand? And you guys talk about it. And it's like, I've never asked that question to my friends, but like that happened in a board game once. But you're like, that would be more uncertainty of like, I don't think we've ever had go win this fake challenge as an individual. And now you are in charge of choosing a tribe or you're the team captain.
Well, and I think that could be a fun idea, right? Even as I'm sitting here and I'm listening and I'm thinking about this as we go, this might sound hokey, this might sound corny, but why not? Oh, you pulled rocks and you think you're going to be captains. You're actually not going to be captains. You're going to run a challenge. And that challenge is going to entail you doing something. And then for every obstacle you complete, you get to pick up a player. And that player you pick up is now on your team. So there is a benefit to getting through first or something along those lines. But maybe you have to pick up somebody from a different tribe. Who knows? You could get creative with this. You could do different things. I like where the shipwrecked idea goes, right? Of like, we're picking up people in the water. They're floating on their pontoons. Who am I going to pick up? Who am I going to save first? Well, if Jonathan Young's there, I'm going to go save Jonathan Young first. But maybe you don't want to save Jonathan Young because maybe you're more focused on saving somebody from your own team or something along those lines. You could do something creative with this. And It's weird because, again, we're coming out of the type of tribe swap we wanted, which was going to two for the first time in forever. But yes, Pridium, you said it. They got unlucky. They did get unlucky. But the producers had a chance here to make sure they didn't get unlucky. And they're getting the footage. They know how close all of these tribes are. They know that there's not a lot of infighting going on, which we're seeing now because it doesn't seem like anybody on the swap tribes is really like, oh my God, I'm so happy that I'm finally away from these people. And so you could have had a 3-3-1 and that would have been huge. And I just think it's such a missed opportunity. And there's so many creative ways to do this. Get creative, get funky with it, do something different. Don't just keep doing the same thing and hoping for good results based on luck. That's not what Survivor is supposed to be. And that's not uncertainty. That's just rolling dice. And we talked about that last season. Rolling dice is stupid. No, like you go and play craps at a casino because there's money to be won. But you don't sit around with your friends without money on the line and play craps because that's not fun. You're rolling dice.
Should they be able, do you want the producers to pivot in the middle of the season? Because what if it wasn't this dynamic where it wasn't 6-6-2, you know? Like, what if it was like 5-4-3 or 5-4-4, whatever the number breakdown would be, you know what I mean? And they did this because you're like, I was thinking like, do I want to give them, because I know they kind of do it anyway, but I'm like, sometimes they say like, we created this format and we're going to do our best within the confines of like, if Jake gets medevaced, we have to adapt to that with the game. So they moved one episode further with the tribe swap. But I think Jeff said on his podcast that they were planning to do this two tribe swap regardless. So I'm like, do we want them to try to do what we're suggesting where they realize it's 6-6-2? Wouldn't it be more cool if we did 3-3-1 on both tribes? But then they wouldn't have that for sure. There's no guarantee. Well,
so here's
or just
what
do it regardless. Just anyway, yeah, it doesn't really matter. It would be more interesting regardless.
Here's where my mind goes with this. There have to be fail safes in place, right? If the stock market goes down by a certain amount, the Fed will jump in or somebody will jump in to save it, right? Something will happen where something will get shut down so that it doesn't keep going. We saw this during COVID numerous times. We saw this with the GameStop sales, right? When that was going on, there should be fail safes. And one of the things that they should say before a season is we are going to do a two tribe swap from three at final 14. Here's how it's going to look. If it is a 6-6-2, the captains of the two, like each person from the tribe of two, they will be captains and they will pick tribes. If it is any other combination of people, 5-5-4, 5-4-4, or 5, whatever it would come out to, 6-5-3, whatever it comes out to, we are going to randomly draw buffs. I think that's fair because then you can say to the person who is the checks and balances person, whatever they're called, you can say, we have written this out. We have said that this is a fail safe because this will save it. Because Will brought it up last night. You get 13 episodes every season. That's it. So by doing this and potentially failing and having it be random and then failing like they did, you are getting two guaranteed boring episodes back to back. Because again, Survivor is not about the journey anymore. It's about the end result. And with it being about the end result, if you have two very predictable end results back to back, it's too obvious. That's two wasted hour and a half of TV. Now you have to move on. You have to be protecting your show. And that's a way to put a fail safe in. And I think protect your show.
I do worry if we complain too much about being boring, they're going to be like, oh, we need more twists. Like we need 3 hourglasses, you know, we need whatever. And I'm like, well, this did, like, I sort of felt like this reminded me of the swap, the dynamics a little bit with Survivor China, which I love. And I know you love, Phil, where it's like 4-2, two at the bottom. The strategy is like throw the challenge, which Rizzo brings up like, hey, we're actually in a good spot here. We can just vote one of them out. And obviously they got Sophie and Alex as like this extra X factor in the group, but they immediately integrate with, you know, the majority, which is what they have to do because of the unfortunate numbers. So I'm kind of like, I didn't hate it when PG throws it. It's fun. And James is all livid and all that. Here, I'm like, well, I did rewatch part of the episode. And I was like, you know, we got Jason, Matt. Unfortunately, they feel doomed. And I don't think that their players were supposed to be really backing much. So I think that the writing is a little bit on the wall, whereas with like James, he was the hero and you were rooting for him. So when he's getting the short end of the stick, you're kind of like clinging on, hoping that he manages to survive. It's a little bit different dynamic, but I'm like, that doesn't make it a bad episode. It's unfortunate the dynamic broke out that way. But I've said for a long time, China is like one of my favorites, if not my favorite season. And yet at the same time, it was fairly predictable. And then they threw the challenge. Mm-hmm. Aaron gets voted out. There's really no mystery there. Maybe they vote out James. This kind of felt like maybe they vote out Matt. Maybe they vote out Jason. They got different reasons for both. One of them goes. And unfortunately, if James were to go back, now they did have the whole idol shenanigans on China, which did create a very fun dynamic where they were swapping idols to the other tribe to protect Jason in this case. Like if MC, who probably wouldn't do it, but if she were to give Jason an idol at the challenge and then Jason loses and then plays the idol and somehow like Nate gets blasted out, that would be pretty fun. That's what we were getting in China, so that's probably something we aren't going to get. But I would like that. That'd be fun to see. That's sort of something we would get occasionally, JT swapping an idol to the opposite tribe, and that was even more of a Hail Mary. This is, I don't think we're going to get that. I think the writing is unfortunately on the wall. I don't know why they wouldn't do that. I'm also like, if you're Hina Strong and Jason's like, I'm Hina Strong, why? How, I guess MC doesn't really seem to believe it much in Hina from what we've
seen. I think they might throw the challenge next week.
Hina, the Yellow Tribe. Well, they'll vote out Shannon or Sage.
The one with Shannon and Sage, I think, will throw the challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I think might happen.
So I'm like, I'm not really complaining too much even about the episode. More of my complaints here at the beginning of this podcast, because I didn't come into this knowing how much, like, if you say pretty much complain about Survivor, I'll go. You can leave me with a microphone for an hour and I could talk about this ad nauseum. I do it for Big Brother every summer. But I'm like, there are things I do like about this episode and this season for the most part. It's just in a vacuum, it's okay. But when I compare it to 8 seasons before it and like the direction of the show, that's when I start to get a little bit, okay, I can get into the weeds of what I don't like about where we're at right now with Survivor and sorry, 49 and all that. So I don't know.
I like jumping off what you're saying. Cause we're like, this happened once in China, but I enjoyed it. China was 2007.
It was like 20 years ago.
We legitimately have very good seasons to mirror off of. Why are we mirroring off bad seasons? Why are we redoing new era stuff 6 times when why don't we redo fans versus favorites 4 or something? Like it is something where you're like, if we put, and we do on every podcast has done, here's our 47 list and 48, we're going to go ahead and put in bottom 2 of our favorite seasons. Like, is it better than Thailand or not? Like, that's what a lot of people probably said over the last year. I would never. I love 48, but do I like the gameplay?
Blake forgot that he has Redemption Island below Thailand. That's
chill. But like, it is one of those things where you're like,
I mean, I do too.
Why are we doing this instead of like, okay, the reason why we liked China is because we knew all 16 people. We don't know all
people
in this season at all. So that's we don't know the dynamic of, would MC give you that? I don't know anything about
it. I know. That's my biggest problem. The Hina edit. I really wish they had more characterization. And we got 90-minute episodes. Like, what is happening?
Right. Yeah. And it's like, well, we're more interested in, there's not even something that like, but because it's new era, we know way more about their family members. And like, I think one of my, I don't know if I want to complain this hard about this, but like, I am watching the episode last night and there is a clip art slideshow of somebody's mom. And I don't think in the history of Survivor, somebody's going to go, my favorite moment, if we're ranking 100 of our favorite moments, top 5, it was super interesting knowing about Christina's mom and her why for being on the show. Like, Christina's going to have to win the show. She's going to have to say at Final Tribal, I have been with my mom this whole time. She's been with me. I can feel her on this island. It came to me. Her wisdom is what helped me get aligned with you, Rizzo. It's what helped me vote out you, Nate. I know the wisdom of Black women in my life, and my mom has just pushed me over the edge, and I want to dedicate everything to her. It's why I'm here. And without her, I would not be sitting in this final chair. If Christina is 12th place, 8th place, or 5th place, why did we watch that slideshow? And it is something where we don't want to, like, here's our final 3 because they're the only 3 people with slideshows. But it is kind of like, why are we using our time on this when I don't know the cast yet?
And that's the fair point. Here's what I will say about Christina's and why I think it differentiates itself from some of the other slideshows we've seen in the past or some of these parent. I complain all the time about the parent stuff, right? I think the parent stuff is stupid. People are focusing way too much on their parents. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know that many people who truly idolize their parents the way that some of the people on Survivor do, the people that they're finding to put on Survivor. I love my parents. Doesn't mean I idolize them in this crazy way.
I would idle Blake my parents out.
Like, Blake's like, I got something to say. I want to get on Blood versus Water with my mom so I can go sumo at sea against her. But the thing is, when I sit here and I watch this happen, I feel for Christina. And what I appreciated about this, here's my in defense of Christina's confessional last night. It was telling us about her more than it was telling us about her mom. Whereas I think when Rizzo talked about his parents earlier in the season, it felt like it was talking so much more about his parents than it was about Rizzo. It was telling me more about where he comes from than who he truly is. Whereas this one gave me a big emphasis on who Christina is as a person. So that's where I think that this one was a little bit different, because it was this breaks me, not I just want my parents to have a better life. There's a big difference between those two things. Or my parent, like we saw last season with Shaheen and Joe and Kyle sitting on the beach, and Camilla, when they're sitting on the beach and they're saying, these are all the hard things that I've been through, or this is what my parents went through. It's fine to do that, but that doesn't really tell me about these people. It tells me about their parents. It tells me about the perseverance of their parents. Shaheen's parents have more perseverance than he does. Like, that's what I learned from that clip. I didn't learn anything about him. And so I think Christina's was at least giving us this, but going to Blake's other point of, we still don't really know the cast. This is the first time we've heard from Christina since episode number one, when she talked about being scared of birds. That was the last time we heard from her. So to hit us with this, it's jarring. It's like, whoa, where did that just come from? Because it came out of nowhere. Even though I agree with Daryl Seymour here, I think it was a great confessional. It came out of nowhere, because we didn't know her yet. If you had given us one confessional from Christina in episode two and one from her in episode three, then you hit us with this. I say, damn, I love her. Like, I want to see where this is going. I want to see where she's going. But Blake says she has to win now. We all know, all three of us sitting here right now know Christina cannot win this season because she had two episodes with no confessionals. We know that.
It's unlikely. I also think this is another thing that makes me think less of the three tribe format, because Christina would become infinitely more relevant if there was only two tribes and she is forced to go to tribal council, probably in one or two episodes. Maybe her game becomes more at the forefront. But when you have three tribes, again, Yellow's winning all the challenges. We don't really need to see them too much. They're not really relevant, as they even pointed out in this episode. Everything that happened in the first three episodes up to this point is irrelevant now, because who cares? It's not about that anymore. And I agree. So, maybe if Christina was getting her tribe had more airtime and we weren't divvying it up between three tribes, and she was going to tribal council and she was voting and her strategy was coming out to the forefront, maybe she'd be having more of an edit and more relevancy. And the same goes for all of them on the Yellow Tribe. I feel, unfortunately, like they're a little bit to the side. And I feel like that's indicative of the season, where we're going. It actually kind of reminds me of 45 a little, with like D's tribe being like the main characters. And then we've got the Blue Tribe, who are kind of there and actually even less fun, because at least we had Bruce and Keturah and Jake and all that. I don't know. I hear you. I've never really been too big on the sob stories, as they call them. Everybody has them, and to some extent I get it. And it makes me, it does touch me a little bit, but you know, Jeff said his all time favorite moment, a couple of years ago was Sari on the balance beam. So I think that's kind of where we're at, you know, and that had nothing to do with anything. It was just a post challenge. Sari got across the balance beam. And let me tell you, I've watched Sari for 80 something days on Big Brother live feeds. Sari doesn't give a shit about that. Sari is cutthroat. She is a mob boss. She loves that stuff. She's so good. And Jeff just like tells me that his favorite moment is Sari crossing. I'm like, look, for the TV hamminess, it's cool-ish, but it has nothing to do with Survivor. Like, it's just very irrelevant to what people love about this show. And it goes for all of the sad stories. It kind of just feels more like they're telling us about it and it's irrelevant to the show. And I want to see like, I want to see Christina somehow have a relevancy to her background, bring it up and not just like have a piece of a slideshow and then she fades away for like another three episodes until she's voted out, which just feels like what we're going to see. And that's frustrating. Like, that's annoying, and it's bad editing. It's bad storytelling. And I'm like, damn, it's nothing to do with Christina herself. It could be anybody. But I think there's a lot of reasons why we got here, how we get here. And unfortunately, I don't know if the show is going to change from that.
And here's the thing, because you brought up China, and China is my favorite season. Like, we've made it
through. I knew that. I was like, if I compare this to China, this might resonate with Phil.
Yeah, and we've made it through now our Every Season Matters. I'm on the Philippines, so I've watched Heroes Villains. I've watched Token Chains. I've watched Gabon. I know that I'm not wrong. The only one that could possibly knock it off at this point is Kageyan. That's the only one that could ever knock it off of its pedestal here. I love China. Here's what I really want to highlight here, and this is where we had 60-minute episodes in China. We had a reward challenge and an immunity challenge, I'm pretty sure, in all four of the first four episodes of that season. And you're saying, you know, they did this swap and it seemed like bullshit. Let's just look at this real quick through four episodes. Okay. Chicken had five confessionals. Ashley had eight. Leslie had 16. Dave had 16. Aaron had five. James had five. That might surprise some people that James only had five through four episodes, but Aaron and James both had five and they only went to one tribal council. Mm-hmm. Sharia had six. Jamie had 10. Jean Robert had, what is that? That's nine. Frosty had six. James again, five. Eric had five. PG had eight. Denise had six. Amanda had six. Courtney had more than she did all of Heroes versus Villains. She had eight. And Todd had 14. Okay. So just think about that. That's pretty even across the board. You're talking lowest was four, highest was 16. Okay. Or lowest was five, highest was 16. On this season, where we have 90-minute episodes, and we don't have a reward challenge every episode. Alex, 31, Sophie, 29, Savannah, 25, Rizzo, 22, Jawan, 12, Nate, 10, Shannon and Steven, both with 9, MC, 8, Sage, 7, Jason, Christina, both with 5, Sophie with 4, and Jeremiah and Jake both had 18 and 12, so they were much higher. Matt actually had 13. But my point with this is, longer episodes, I know these people less than I knew the people in China. So when this swap does happen and it does screw Aaron and James, I'm pulling so hard for them at that point, especially James. We all wanted Aaron to go home in that episode, which is why the season is saved, because James is saying, I don't really care, just vote me out. And then they won't vote him out anyway. And we have the dynamic back and forth with these idols and people on cross tribes going back and forth and getting to communicate, Leslie talking to Jamie and all these different things that were going on. None of that is happening here. There's nothing unique. There's nothing different. So when a swap happens and we see people get screwed by it, I'm not pulling for Jason right now. Like, I'm not. I'm sorry, but I don't know you. Why would I pull for you in this situation when I know, when I just read off the confessional count, Sophie, 29, Savannah, 25, Rizzo, 22, Jawan, 12, Nate, 10. That's the rest of his tribe. He has five. There's no underdog story there. It's a waste.
Well, that's also, again, a symptom of, I think, three tribes. I think if you have two tribes and you see somebody go to tribal council more, they're become more relevant. I just think that's a huge part of it, where three tribes delineates the airtime all over the place. If a tribe constantly wins, which we've seen repeatedly in the new era, there's always a disaster tribe, which dominates the airtime. You're left with tribes. And I mean, heck, even like Luvu on 41 with Erica, she was on the dominant tribe and her edit was paltry. And we didn't know her. And she was the winner because there wasn't any time, because they focused so much on the scrambling for the challenge, the scrambling for the vote, tribal council that dedicates a third of the episode. And that was 60 minutes. Maybe it would have been different. I doubt it. But again, like, these are definitely pain points that repeatedly come up. And I'm like, this is why we get these. I don't know. I'm like, this season for me hasn't really done much. It's just okay. I wonder in the context of the entire season, if first four episodes are okay, if these are just like, they're fine. They're not bad, but they're not great. I'm not really getting much from them yet, if you're wondering like where I'm at with this. And I do think a lot of the new era is kind of like that. I'm waiting for like this season to really give me something good and pop off. And this has been very rudimentary. And then there's like the dynamic where I compare it to China, but I'm like, the characterization, and it's like, I don't even care about how many confessionals people get so much. It's like, what is the actual content that we're getting when they're talking and they're describing things? What are they describing? If it's just strategy, it's kind of gets repetitive and a little bit boring, because it's like, well, I've got three numbers and they got two numbers. I'm like, I'm not going to remember that in like 10 seconds. But if they're talking like drama and there's inner tribe conflict, which there was on China all over the place, like Zhang Hu was constantly beefing, there's way more memorable five confessionals from Chicken, because all of his content is just like ridiculous, right? It's you know, Jelinski was a fun
Dave for Ashley.
I think of like Jelinski, where his entire episode edit was just like, watch this guy fumble the bag every time he's on the screen. That's pretty fun. There's Zane on Philippines, right? Mm-hmm. But in this case, I'm like, well, what do we get? I guess the shoe bandit, a little forced. Sorry, Jake, a little forced, but you know, it's okay.
He stole Sophie's shoe. Hey, hang on. Blake, I know you want to talk, but I got to bring up Patrick Stahl here, who, longtime listener, Patrick. I'm sorry. I just have to roast you real quick. We can learn a lot about Jason just from paying attention to his body language. If Jason is on this season for his body language, that is the worst casting choice in the history of the show. And Jesse and his entire team should be immediately fired, regardless of whether they got nominated for
his body language. Interesting. Okay.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing necessarily with that. You can still learn, but no, we're not actually learning anything about these people right now that we're not hearing from. They want us to focus on Alex and Sophie, and they want us to focus on Rizzo and Savannah. The fact that there's a gap of 10 confessionals between your top four and two of them have gone to tribal council once and everybody else, that's terrible.
Yeah, I think that's bad for the season. It's indicative of like where we're going. I would have told you like the top four confessional getters are like one of them is the winner without even knowing who might win this season. I'm not doing a true contenders video because I feel like I know who wins and it's beyond the episodes, unfortunately. So I just don't feel comfortable like putting that out there for people out there. A lot of people don't follow the news of like who's on Survivor 50. I usually would do that by now, but I'm like, well, it's pretty, I feel like the writing's on the wall. Like it's Savannah, Rizzo, Alex and Sophie. Like if you were just watching this show, it'd be one of those four. One of those four is the winner. I gotta think, unless we're getting some crazy out of left field.
Nate Jawan, not counting out yet. Steven, he hasn't gone to tribal council yet, at least, but
I don't know. I feel like they just don't stand out for four episodes. Blake, how you doing?
I've got a lot of thoughts that some of them mirrors, some of them build upon again. I think another thing that's frustrating about this season is it doesn't even feel like the people that are in this dominant situation are earning it. And this is this has been breadcrumbed for us. So I kind of want to be like, how does Rizzo lose? Of he's going to be on 50, surprise. Everybody knows that.
He could win.
He could win. I think Rizzo's going to lose. And here's why. I think there's a storyline brewing that I think we should all follow. He is doing the challenge against Alex, but he doesn't do any of the work. He copies all of Alex's work and uses Alex's work to beat Alex. When it's time for Rizzo, and then he goes, Survivor Bucket List, Yahoo, R-I-Z-G-O-D. Now it's time for him to get an idol. He doesn't do any of the work. His allies go dig up all the idol for him. I think this is going to come into play whenever Rizzo wants to win this game at Final Tribal Council. People will go, you did not do all of the work. And these are breadcrumbs that have shown up so far in this season of Rizzo is a great person. He's super fun to be around. But all of this hard work to get an alliance to the end, he didn't do any of the hard work to get a majority at the tribe swap. But he benefits from this greatly. I think he will get into a merge with all of his people intact. He will be in a dominant position, but it will be no strength of himself. And I do think the reason why we're showing another person who is so domineering and thinking about everything of, oh, you thought about being in finance for 5 seconds? You're out of here, Matt. Like, those are the things we're getting from that side of those confessionals. So I think Rizzo, already after a month, here's why Rizzo loses at the end. He doesn't do any of the work himself.
I love that take. That's media literacy, Blake always says, right? That is a really good take of, can he make the argument where people say we've done it for you? He gets that idol last night. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it's not that important. I mean, that could be a very fair point. And a lot of the confessionals we're giving are just him saying, I've checked off the bucket list. I did something cool. Whereas Savannah's is, I don't trust that person. I don't like what's going on. And Sophie's is very similar. Like Sophie and Savannah are getting the heavy strategic confessionals. They're both very good at confessionals too. But they're getting very heavy strategic confessionals in a way that I also feel like Steven is getting, even though Steven has not had to do anything strategic the entire season. He's getting those types of confessionals where I do agree with Blake. Riz Gods is more about like R-I-Z-G-O-D, the man, the myth, the legend, baby. Like that's it. He says it every time, whether it fits or not, he's committed to the bit and that's good for him. But I could see that being ultimately the point of you didn't do enough and you're sitting next to people who did more if he does get to the end.
Then the other thing that kind of bothered me about last night, but this is what they're showing. Jason is an alternate. Maybe he wasn't lighting the world on fire, but he's checking other boxes. He's going to be really good at puzzles on the show. Matt is good at some stuff. Maybe he's checking a lot of boxes. I don't think I've seen two people in this scenario play worse in a long time. They did not say anything positive to make a Uli person go, you know what? I am going to keep you over the other one. It felt like they were doing their dead level best to get voted out. And if I was somebody there, I'd be like, they have to have an idol, because there would be no reason for them to talk about, like, maybe if you guys save me and we get to the merge, I'll make sure the other Hina people don't go after you. It's like, what? That.
And I was like, who else are they going after then?
Yeah, exactly. There's only two other people left, Alex and Sophie. What are
we
doing?
And it is something where, like, it was not fun to watch Jason. He didn't work himself out of a hole. He did have maybe a novel idea of, like, I'm just going to play the shot in the dark. That doesn't get followed through on. Was it a fake out of, now I have it for next time? Ha ha ha.
You might say at the beginning of episode 5, to be fair.
And like, that's something where it's like, you're leaving us in the lurch of, like, I'm a pincher crab. Like, that's the difference between him and Matt going out. Or no, Matt goes out because he says Nate's name.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that's been said. Nate gets the voting confessional. And it is something where Jawan is displayed to, you should have done it, Jawan. Like, we have Savannah going, Jawan, you are on the bottom. This would be a good vote for you. Like, all of the, there's like five people on the tribe that went of the seven who are not playing well. And you're like, it's hard to be rooting for these people, or like, it's going to be super cool to watch Uli go through everyone whenever, like, everybody's falling over themselves to lose to them. This kind of reminds me of, like, Token Sheens, where it's like, everyone was like, JT, can I lose to you? And they're like, no, I'm going to lose to JT. Chill. And then somebody's like, no, let's vote them out so I can lose to you, JT. And you're just like, it's great gameplay, or is it not?
It reminded me of Todd and Amanda a little bit. Like, they're not fawning over Savannah and Rizzo, but they're not helping themselves. And they're all running around in circles while Todd and Amanda are actually scheming on the side, like, clocking what's happening. And they're like, hey, I don't like either of these two guys. Can we get rid of both of them? Could we do a double elimination tonight? Because, like, Jason's over here giving us little, and he's like, oh, I've got great connections, and I can really pull strings when we merge. And it's like, well, but who are we pulling strings for? Like, it's red and yellow. Like, there's no one else. It'd be like if, like, I'm trying to think of, like, I keep going to China parallels. I'm like, what if they're like, tell Todd and Amanda, like, we'll pull strings. I'm like, but you're our opponents. Like, we need you out.
But and then, I made the example last night. It's when Terry is trying to get numbers on Panama, and he keeps telling people, I can get you to final six.
Right.
And they're like, all like, we're in the Kasaya six. What are you talking about?
Of we course can get it well without six. You, buddy. And in fact, we'd probably prefer to, because I can beat half these people in a challenge. Yeah. I can't beat you in the challenge. And then you've got Matt, who's like, what if I beat Jason to the punch and shoot myself in the foot faster and give them more of an immediate reason to not want me in the game, just in the event, because he's outwardly showing, I'm going to create a plan to go against you guys, to undermine your strategy. Jason's like, I'm just going to sit there in a hole with my little pincers up and do nothing and just, like, tell you the truth, which I'm like, if I was either of them, I would do everything in my power to basically kiss their butt, to get in good, show them, you know what? You're right. Everything from the first week of the game is irrelevant. I'm here to win $1 million. I'm with the Uli tribe now. We're going to go to the end. Like, that happens on Survivor all the time, where the post-swap tribe becomes the dominant majority. And then all of a sudden, Jason is looking like a mastermind, and he might even have actually have more options because he's got the old connections and he's got the new connections. But the fact that he cut himself short, I'm like, I don't love this. I think it's a very bad read, even if he's shot in the dark machination, like, saved him from playing it. I'm like, that's not worth anything compared to creating a strong social network with a majority tribe that is currently calling the shots and will probably be the people you have to work with going into the post merge, assuming you're even there at this point, which you probably won't be. But
and I think that this is where on the one tribe, we see Shannon talking to Christina and trying to work her way in. We see Sage trying to talk to people and work her way in.
Yeah,
we do. On this tribe, it was assumed, okay, Sophie's in with them. Matt and Jason could have said, hey, I don't really like my Hina tribe. I want to be, like you just said, I'm with you. I want to be that fifth, because now you're in the swing position at final five.
Sophie immediately gets scenes with her connecting with all of the power players on the Uli tribe. She doesn't know them, but she's like, I'm going to immediately go to them. She goes to Savannah. Nate says, I like her. She's really personable. She's doing a good job. And obviously she's in a very prime position because she has literally nothing. She's just an extra vote at this point. But she's setting herself up with the people that are going to be her new alliance, her new tribe. And I'm like, if I'm Matt or Jason, yeah, maybe the writing's on the wall, but maybe it isn't. Maybe you create a new write something new on the wall and pivot from there, because you prove to be that good of a player that you're like, I'm not stuck in my ways. Which is, by the way, it's like 6 days. Like, come on, what are we doing? This isn't like old school, or it's 14 days or whatever by this point. And then Matt's like, I'm going to try to squeak through something. But he didn't even know he didn't have Sophie, which was like shocking to him at tribal council. He was like, oh my God, yeah, I didn't even have. And then he finds out that he got completely hoodwinked by her being already in with it, because she did the right thing by going to the power players, because she doesn't have the numbers. I guess if like Rizzo lost his vote, but I don't think Matt knew that Rizzo didn't have a vote. Because I'm like, well, if that's the case, they could pull in Sophie. Maybe they could get the majority if they're both like, we're all going to play our shots in the dark. The four red players split their vote 2-2, and then you do a 3-2-2. But they didn't have any, there was no scenes where they're trying to pull Sophie in. So yeah. I'm like, this is like every man for themselves, and the woman is on top. And to be fair, I didn't even realize that it was Savannah and Sophie, the only two women on that tribe. And they're like the front runners to win the season, I think.
Absolutely.
It's just like, yeah, it was really bad gameplay. I was like, I rewatched it this afternoon. I was like, wow, these guys are really bad at Survivor. Like, I don't know if this is giving China, to be fair. People are really bad on that season, but they're fun to watch. I was like, this is just a... And also dragging Queen Sandra on your way out is such a choice.
Well, and I appreciate his sentiment though of, I don't like the way she played. I don't want to be the person who says anybody but me. But if he would have said anybody but me last night, he'd still be in the game, because they were all much more worried about Jason. But then Matt in his exit press today said that he was purpled. He had 13 confessionals. That's not purpled. You were relevant to this season.
And, did
you
say purpled? Oh yeah, it's not purple.
And we had
Purple Kelly. Would
it, Patrick Stahl said here, do you think some of what we're getting from Sage, for example, this season would have been conveyed through confessionals in the past rather than letting the seer talk live? I do agree with that. And I think that's the point he was making when he said it's not just all about confessionals. We are starting to hear people say other stuff. But Matt got 13 confessionals and we hear him talking live. That guy was not purpled at all. Jason's been purpled, if anybody. Jason was literally purpled in episode number 2 of this season.
I think Matt only was not Sophie at all. Only Sophie B is the one who could be even in the consideration for a person who's been
Sophie S.
Is it Sophie S? Sorry, Sophie S. Not Sophie B. Not Sophie Bellardi. Sophie S.
Which I want to put my hand up immediately of, this is the refreshing thought process. And then it was immediately hand snapped on the show, where Sophie S goes, Jeff, can we get some freaking donuts or like some pizza? Like, some carbs, why is this my diet food? I'm not coming on Survivor to lose weight when I win a reward. Like, when I win a reward, I should gain 5 pounds back and reset for 3 days, not bananas. And like, I think that's something where anybody that knows anything about food, if you eat a whole bunch of fruit and nothing else, it's going to go straight through you. And you're just like, thanks, Jeff, for all the like problems we're going to have. And like, I think the other tribe gets the whole, they focus on the soundbite. They don't let Sophie explain herself or live in it. They go to the other tribe where they're like, Sophie's a real idiot. We'll take all the fruit. And you're like, I love this energy. This is some Courtney Yates energy of like somebody finally stepping up to Jeff and being like, no, I'm not ready to see what I'm playing for. This is bullshit. Like, do you have anything else back there? And Jeff going like, oh, I guess we're never going to hear from Sophie ever again. Most people have taken it as like, this explains why she hasn't been seen on the show in confessionals or whatever, because production must hate her ass. And then it is one of those things, well, why would they put this in the edit in the first place instead of just having us always wonder why?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's totally fair. I don't think she's getting a purple edit because, or being, you know, mildly invisible. Because again, purple is purple. Purple Kelly had one confessional until her boot episode, and she lasts 11 episodes. Okay. But when it comes to somebody like Sophie, I do feel like she just might not be giving the bites they want that are pushing story forward or saying what she needs to. I honestly think Jeff might have appreciated that last night. I know there was some hand slapping, and the hand slapping came more from the cast, who were saying, how could you ever be so ungrateful? But I do feel like Jeff might have appreciated where it is, you know, I did get you a shitty gift for Christmas. I should have done better. This was terrible. You said, I don't like Taylor Swift, so I bought you every Taylor Swift vinyl, and now you're pissed at me. Like, that's what this feels like, right? It feels like, why did you get me this? Especially because this really shows how depleted Fiji is at this point, because they've been filming on the same beaches nonstop over and over and over again.
They don't even have pizza for
two. They don't even have fruit. No, they don't even have fruit on the islands for these people to eat anymore. We see Jeremiah and whoever eating doo-doo, as Sean Rector would say. They're eating that thing that I don't even know if they were supposed to be eating that fruit. It didn't look very good. It didn't look very edible. It looked horrible. Because there's nothing left, because it's just been depleted, because they just destroyed these beaches at this point. So the fact that you think
could this be a metaphor for Survivor as a whole, of there's no more confessionals to get. There's no more people to cast. There's no more twists to be made unless we get some new creative energy where we go in a different direction.
Yeah,
we need a new era for 51, because I think 50 will close a door of here's all the times this shit works. These are the 24 people that are good enough to carry whatever we put in front of you.
Right.
But what are we going to do for 51?
Yeah.
My biggest fear is nothing. They just go back to the same old, same old. Yeah.
I could see that for sure. I mean, I'm not counting that out at all. I always said that
Jake
I was
scared. And his whole family is a tribe, and it's just three families.
It's so remember
the Marianos versus the Latimers versus the Diaz Twines
versus the Hanses.
Versus the Hanses. Bring all the Hanses back. Oh my God.
Yeah, that would be Brandon's dad.
That would be, as the kids say, that'd be content. I would be signing up. The vibes would be rancid, and we would be having so much to talk about.
6-7 or whatever, right? I don't know. I sit here and I look at what they're probably going to do after 50. And this is how I felt with 40, where I kept saying it was like Arya Stark asking the question in Game of Thrones of what's west of Westeros, right? Essos is east. This is west. What's west of Westeros? And the question I kept asking before 40 was what's after 40. And I kept saying it doesn't feel like anything. And then I was pretty much right, because then COVID hit and it shut down production on Survivor. And I said, holy shit, did I predict the end times for Survivor? And then Survivor ends up coming back. And you know what? It hasn't really been Survivor since season 40. It really hasn't. And so I do want, and that doesn't mean that they're all bad seasons. I think 46 is very good. I think 47 is very good. I enjoy 43 quite a bit. I think 45, after you get through the first four episodes, is great, which, hey, we're just getting through the first four episodes of this. Maybe it's going to be great. Who knows? But I do worry that after 50, it's not what is after 50. It's not the what's west of Westeros. It is it just going to be more of the same? Because if it's more of the same, you're going to lose any goodwill you had with season 50, and it's gone. The one thing I will say, though, is 52, 54, or 52, 55, those are both going to be returning player seasons. They know that the hype around that is more important than anything right now, and they realize that they have not created stars in too long of a time, and that people are getting so tired of this. They can keep saying that the casting is amazing, and I keep saying this. It's not the individuals. It's how the individuals interact with each other. The casting team is in charge of putting the individuals on the island to beef with each other, because that's what reality TV is, and they're not doing that anymore. So it's not the individuals. It's how the individuals interact, and they need to mix that up, because right now people are just so vocal about the fact that they're over this shit. And so you got to mix it up after this. And that's going to go, I think, to being returning player seasons, because that's the easiest get out of jail free card. Because even when a returning player season is bad or not that good, like Game Changers, we're still going to tune in every week, because I'm still going to sit there and say, is Suri going to pull this off? Is Suri going to pull this off? Is Suri going to pull this off? And enough people had just watched Aubrey play that they were excited. Maybe they're not going to feel that same level of excitement for Sophie Bellarity two seasons after. But that's how you build your stars. You have to start somewhere. And I think it's going to start with 50 is just the beginning. So even if we go back to three tribes and it's nonsense, we're at least going to see returning player seasons, so we can have some rooting interest again and not just watch the same archetypes nine seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Quick question for you, Peridium, because we don't talk ever. 50, let's say 55 is the season where this announcement comes out. This is Jeff Probst's first season not hosting.
Ooh.
Are you more excited for 55, or are you like, this is potential to be the worst season of all time?
I think I was just thinking as Phil was going off on one that I wish I knew how much Probst, knowing he's at the top of the food pyramid right now, how much do they, what do they care about really? And like, what goes into their decision-making process for each season? And for Jeff to be like super over the top, like he goes on the podcast and he says a bunch of whatever, but I'm like, what is that? I want to know like the minute to minute meetings, the boardrooms before these seasons. Like, what does he do for 12 months? Cause I know what he does for 52 days, but what is he doing for the rest of that time that we're getting like a lot of the same thing over and over again? What does he really care about? If he were to hypothetically, how far into this podcast would he ever make it before he turns it off? 2 minutes? 5 minutes? An hour and 5 minutes? I'm like, I wonder what he's really taking in versus what he's just sort of like saying and then not doing. So I'm like, then you ask that question, like, if Jeff isn't around, does the show get better? Does it get worse? I would say I'd be curious. I think the problem is like, I don't know to what extent, if you get rid of Jeff and it gets worse, like, I don't know if it'll ever get better at that point. Like, I think Jeff maybe has some potential because I know he has cared in the past. I've seen it. He went on to Survivor Sucks, if you've ever heard about this, and wrote he wrote a massive letter to the SurvivorSucks.com fan base about Redemption Island and Give It a Shot. If you ever seen that, I don't know if you knew about that or not. He went on and he wrote a whole thing explaining why you should give it a chance after two episodes. And I said, okay, let's see what happens. And it was like my least favorite season. But I took away from that, like, Jeff really does, he's in the weeds. He gets affected by it. And I think he cares, but then not much is happening. I feel like the needle doesn't get moved in the new era very much.
I just want to say this though. There are minor changes that are happening. They're just happening so far after the fact. Because I do think like going to Two Tribes, that's something we listen to. Last season when they picked those teams at Mergatory, that's something of them listening to us, right? Getting rid of Hourglass, talking, and doing a tribe swap after a while.
Absolutely.
It's all happening so late after the fact that it's, okay, you've already lost our goodwill now. And maybe that's because they have to film back-to-back seasons. And I don't know. But you got to know when you're out there what's working and what's not.
I do kind of wish...
41, when Danny McRae screams at you and says, this is bullshit and unfair. And I don't know if Danny McRae ever screams, but he did say this is bullshit and unfair. And you bring it back next season anyway. You're just not paying attention to that.
Right. I'm like, this comes up all the time for Big Brother. Dan, like, do you ever watch Big Brother or no?
I have watched every season basically religiously besides the last season. I finally
didn't watch 27.
I went for my mental health of, I don't want to say all this, but I pay attention on Twitter because all the clips always pop up.
Yeah.
I did Thursday nights, go see who's HOH. I know about the gameplay kind of,
right?
But I did not watch a single broadcast episode this season.
Did you watch, right? You watch the feeds?
I no. watched clips, but I did not watch.
Oh, okay.
I tuned in maybe two nights this year.
Okay.
That's a shame. I think they'll be good.
I loved it. I almost said this might be a top five season. It was just really fun. But the producers do everything in their power to screw it up all the time. And it's like, they don't even get the right, when it's a success, we don't trust that they get why it's a success.
The spaghetti hit the wall in the right order.
Yeah. And fans loved it. But I'm like, do you know what happened to lead to being a success? Or is it, because they've done some really bad things. This last season of Big Brother had, I think, the worst twist in the history of the show. It was like, to me, it was like Do or Die or The Hourglass. But the season itself around it was phenomenal. I had a great time. I loved it. It was dramatic, chaotic. It was insane. The cast was fun. There was so many plot twists every week from the people, not from the producers. And so I'm like, when Jeff goes to the drawing board, he constantly comes up with like Hourglass, Do or Die. We're going to do three tribes forever.
Fire tokens.
And I'm like, I don't trust that man coming to the drawing board, reacting to him. I appreciate that he's willing to say, okay, that was a bad idea. He's reflected on that a lot over the many 20 years that I've watched him, where he's been like, I hear you. And we're going to try something else. And I appreciate that. So when you ask that question, Blake, like, I like that Jeff at least pretends, or maybe he straight up does react to the fans and he listens, because I don't really get that from their Big Brother producers very often. I think maybe they do a little bit, but they act like they don't, so it's weird. But I'm also like, I don't know, a part of me wants to dramatically move the show in a random direction, just see what happens. My worry is that it does actually go into the wrong hands of somebody who cares even less and is more by the books and just wants to straight up produce the same generic nothing, whereas I don't know. So I'm like, that's a, it's a 50. I'd be down to see it.
I want him. Bring JLP over.
I don't know to what extent did JLP affect the production decisions on Australian Survivor ever? I know he was the host, but Jeff was a host and then he became an executive producer.
Yeah, I'm just saying more along, I want JLP to host it. And I know JLP is not much younger than Jeff, but he's a little bit younger than Jeff. And if Jeff wants to step down, if he says, I don't want to be host, which I don't think is coming anytime soon.
No, I don't think it is either.
I think to answer Blake's question, I'm not more excited for it, because right now, Jeff, for as frustrating as he can be to some people sometimes, and like, look, he's the host of the show. He's an EP. He's at the top of the pyramid, like you said, Peridium. He knows he's going to take criticism. For as annoying as Jeff can be, Jeff's also really good. He's a lot better than every single other host on television. Every single one. It doesn't matter. If you go and you watch a TV show that is a reality game type show, nobody comes close to Jeff Probst. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. From the shows I watch, Jeff is by far the best.
By far. So if you lose Jeff and you say to me, we're going to bring in somebody else and we're going to have three tribes of six, and even the tribe that gets decimated is going to be so in love with each other because they're just such good friends that they feel bad about voting each other out. And the two tribes that get along so well with each other when they're dominating, and we get these like fake drama moments of that might be who I vote out. If everybody's just going to get along and I'm not going to have Jeff, no, I'm done. I'm done. Yeah. Whatever season that is, I'm done. I'm not more excited for it. And right now I trust Jeff more than I trust, again, who casting is putting together these tribes.
What if they took David Guinat from Survivor Australia and made him executive producer of the US? Would you trust that? I don't know.
No.
Like that, you wouldn't. Okay. So I'm like, I don't know.
I wouldn't.
I would like to think that there are people out there. Like the thing with Jeff is that we've had him for 40, 50 seasons. So we're so used to what he's giving us. But I'm like, what if another adult showed up who was just as passionate, or maybe a little less, but still passionate enough, and was willing to try other things or try going back to the drawing board and giving more of what, like, there are so many ideas in the community for Survivor and Big Brother. And there are so many great ideas. It's like, wow, that's a terrible twist that we just got. We could have easily tweaked it just like this swap to make it actually really good. And it doesn't feel like rocket science. And I'm like, why does Jeff never do that? I don't know. I don't want to say he doesn't do it at all.
They do it all in 4 days before you go to Fiji instead of like.
And just I'm like, like what is he doing? I know they
take longer, but it doesn't feel like it. My answer to my own question to throw my layer into it, I think if Jeff steps down, the show has to work hard again. And that's what I'm excited for.
That'd be fun.
Because there's a Jeff-sized hole, we need. And we don't quite trust the new. Is it going to be Rob Mariano? Well, he's not 30. Should we do a 30-year-old? Should we do somebody from a different Survivor season? What are we going to do? No matter what happens as that host, we're going to have to make sure the show is running on all cylinders. So it's not the new host and the bad cast and the bad twist killed it. We can just blame it all on the host and get a new host if we need another new one.
Well, it's like, who is, if Jeff steps down, like who's then calling the shots? Because that's probably not the new host.
No.
Right. So it would be like, who called it?
If Jeff steps down, he's only stepping down.
If you think about it, like Jeff wasn't calling a lot of the shots for those first 20 seasons. It was what, Mark Burnett and who else? Like, I know Kirov Rose, she's been the challenge guy. It's another thing I wish we would, I keep watching. I'm like, these challenges, I wish they could be like so much more interesting. I feel like that wouldn't be that hard, but. You know, I guess budgeting and all that makes it so they just reuse the same challenges and different amalgamations. But I'm like, who is calling the shots to decide we're going to do two tribes? We're going to bring Exile Island or a variation. This coconut throwing one reminds me of Survivor New Zealand, Thailand. They had a twist called the Outpost. I don't know if you've seen that season where they had one player from each tribe meet up in a secluded area and compete in a challenge for a reward. And the reward was usually like a whatever, some random thing. But it was fun because it allowed us for like 10 minutes to get these players, get the spotlight on, kind of like a journey. But it wasn't like losing votes. Players didn't lose stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's a great twist. I wish they would do that on US Survivor. And then they kind of did it a little bit this season for one episode. So I'm like, where are these kinds of ideas coming from? Who's deciding them? If Jeff isn't deciding them, I'd be curious to see what that would look like. And I think that if Survivor continues to be going in the direction it's going, it will inevitably happen. Jeff will eventually step down, maybe 10 seasons from now. I'm down with it. I'm down to try new things. I don't know. You know, I don't know. The first 20 seasons, Jeff was not the executive producer. And if you're listing off all those seasons at the top of this podcast and you love it, maybe we go back to that.
You want to hear something delusional here? Here's something delusional.
What's that?
Call up people in the community who do podcasts and who do stuff. And I'm not saying call me. I'm just saying call up people who are big in this community. Not players, because a lot of ex-players don't really realize, I think, what makes the show click. And yeah, I'm not saying that as an insult. I just, they've been too close to it. So they see it too close, right? I think that you need to find people who are literally just fans, and they're not doing this for TikTok fame, and they're not doing this for whatever. They love talking about the show. There's a lot of people in this community, all the people who kind of do what you do, Pretium. I feel like they're doing it for the love of the show, not to make a bunch of money. I know the podcasters, if you're doing a podcast and you're 5,000 views bigger than us or smaller than us, you're not making very much money. I know that. And so it's like, you're doing this for the love of the game.
Yeah.
They need to sit down with those people. They really do. And I think that would help. That doesn't mean they have to listen to everything.
No, for sure.
But just to hear, what do you actually think? Hear from multiple people and let them talk it out and say, because honestly, this episode that we just did right now, I don't think talked about last night's episode really at all. We barely talked about it at all. We've just been talking about, we've hit a point where there's nothing to talk about the episodes. So we end up sitting here talking about the structure overall. And I want, if you're a 49 player listening to this,
I have no interest. You're the problem.
I think it's production.
I think the more interesting conversation happens around the show than about the show.
Agreed. For Blake, go ahead, you're dying.
I think another thing you guys agreed on where I have to, let's put some knowledge behind this. Jeff Probst is one of the best hosts out there. Your competition is Julie Chen, Phil Kogan, TJ Lavin, Alan Cummings is coming and kicking your ass, and RuPaul. Two of those people are better than Jeff Probst and have proven it and won Emmys over it.
Alan is acting, I think, though. That's my difference there. RuPaul, I'll give you, but Alan is acting.
And that's better than what Jeff's doing at this time or whatever. So, like, I think Jeff is a monolith that could never be replaced is one of my, like, I disagree with that so much of, like, we just haven't had a new reality host because all three of those CBS people started in 2000. It's 25 years later. Nobody ever had a chance. Like, Jerry O'Connell replaced Julie Chen for 10 seconds on one episode. I enjoyed that episode. I thought it was fresh energy, weird manic stuff somewhere, but it's such a different take because Julie Chen is a robot. That's her whole thing, Chenbot. And you're like, TJ Lavin is probably the worst challenge host of all of them. Of Johnny Mosley is my favorite, and I have stopped watching the challenge over the last 5 years because not only are we showing the same exact people, I just could not get past TJ Lavin talking about how important things were when you're like, this is a game show. Like, some people you kick off for quitting and you're like, never come back here. You're a piece of shit. And then somebody else like doesn't want to jump off and you're like, oh, my poor baby angel. And like, even somebody like Fox has a whole network propped up on one person. There's 35 cooking shows and 35 cooking competition shows because of what's his name? I'm forgetting it right now, Gordon Ramsay. Like, he's so much better than Jeff. When we were like,
no way.
There's no way in the grand scheme of stuff, I think you could say Jeff Probst is better than Gordon Ramsay at this point.
Yes, you can. You see the highlights of Gordon Ramsay, dude. Come on.
Ramsay is more dynamic than Jeff Probst in Ramsay our Lord
is that 2025. Show. He is Hell's Kitchen. He is those shows. Jeff Probst is not Survivor. Jeff Probst shows up on that island and is Jeff Probst every time. Gordon Ramsay is playing a character on TV. Alan Cumming is playing a character on TV. Somebody mentioned Terry Crews here. Terry Crews is an actor. Like, Jeff Probst is a host. That is different. And he's not playing a role.
Give him a role to play then. Let's go.
That's stupid. That's stupid. I think that's dumb.
Jess should have a new outfit like Alan every episode.
Yes.
And he should highlight that and not actually talk about what's going on.
He should come in wearing like he's been living out there for like 3 months, you know,
face paint, Survivor man.
Oh, face paint. Like they give him face paint for one. And Jeff shows up with his own face paint on. He gives the tribe like the South Pacific.
The host of Top Shot. Should come back.
Get out of here. You know what Gordon Ramsay's job is? It's Colby. You know how much easier Gordon Ramsay's job is than Jeff's too? He's in an air conditioned thing where he works.
Bro.
I mean, to be fair, Jeff, from what I've heard, like Jeff's mansion is like down the street.
From what?
From the challenges.
Oh yeah, from
our podcast 2 weeks ago, we had someone break down how Jeff only has to walk 12 steps to go.
Yeah, like plenty of people have gone to Fiji. I was tempted to do it at one point just to see for myself. And I'm like, Jeff lives on the island for the time that he's, you know, doing this stuff. So I'm like, he's not sweating it out like they used to do it back in Marquesas.
Yeah,
like he could afford it, you know, he could do something. He could,
I like this Peridium guy.
I mean, I agree, I'm not monolithic. The moment I watched Australian Survivor and enjoyed it or whatever, I'm like, yeah, we don't need Jeff, isn't a staple. He's great to have in some ways, but after 50 seasons, I do sometimes wonder, is it like, are we just stuck in this lane and we haven't deviated? And that's kind of why we're complaining about it so much, is that Jeff is like at the head of the, he's the brain of this operation. And I'm like, how are we like 9 seasons deep and nothing's, it's just so predictable. It's like, yeah, we have nowhere to hide. I'm like, is that a good thing? It feels like it's actually going against the show now.
Nick Cannon, let's go. Love it.
I know. Pridium's over here making good points and Blaise just reading the chat. No, I agree with you though. It's not, again, new era uncertainty and tribe sauce. We're wrapping this thing up because I got to go eat dinner. But
yeah, go for it.
I can hear it being, I can smell it being done right now. And I'm just like, my God, I need to get up. But it, we go back to new era uncertainty. There is none. There is no new era uncertainty. Doing one tribe swap to two tribes when it's a random buff draw is not uncertainty. It's not. Yeah, okay, you might have gotten swap screwed or switch screwed, as Jeff is going to call it now, because now it's a tribe switch, not a tribe swap. I roll. But you sit there and you watch this and you say, it's not unpredictable. It's not. There's no uncertainty. If you're feeling uncertain in that moment, it's because you're living in that moment. Us watching at home, there's no uncertainty. There's none.
I feel like it's uncertain if you've never seen a season of Survivor before. That's like, yeah. I'm like, in a vacuum, it's uncertain. You're like, whoa, a swap. But I'm like, you know.
Well, like, I also watched the challenge for the first time ever when it wasn't Road Rules versus the challenge because of COVID, right after COVID. And I thought it was cool and unique. And then I realized, oh shit, this has been the same show for 7 years. And it's still the same show that it was when I started watching it in COVID. So anything is going to seem unique and uncertain if you're not familiar with it, right?
I'm sure MC was like, what?
Yeah.
We can try swaps.
Tribes? You can do two? Yeah. I didn't hear it was loud.
Oh, there's a challenge?
Yeah, she's an absolute monster.
She's a monster. I think MC is, by the way, I want to brag about her. She is climbing up the ranks of people I would first pick of like, pick a tribe of the strongest women, men, whatever. It's like Jonathan Young and MC are up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's anyone you'd want from 49 to come back? Like you wish they had gone on to 50?
Sophie.
At this point? Is it just Sophie?
Yeah.
I'm just curious at this point. We're only 4 episodes deep, so we got plenty of time to see if there's anything else. But I was like, oh, you know, okay, I'm getting a taste for who we're getting. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't have, I actually agree. I was like, kind of wish we had Sophie back. I think
Sophie might have been too demanding on her though, because going from the disaster tribe, she probably lost a bunch of weight. Who knows? Maybe she ends up being the winner of the season, and that's why they didn't ask her back.
I don't know. I mean, Russell Hantz came back and he was on a disaster tribe in Fiji.
They didn't care about Russell Hantz at that point. Now Jeff
hoping to kill Russell.
Yeah, they were honestly hoping that would be it. Like, no, but seriously, like Russell Hantz was great TV. Russell Hantz is a psycho who was willing to go and do it. I think a lot of other people they say to themselves, hey, this is my life. I gotta go back to my life, I gotta figure something out. I also think that production and stuff is much more careful with how willing they are to have people play in those back-to-back type scenarios. Where back in the day, I mean, if you look at Russell Hantz on day one of Samoa and day 39 of Heroes versus Villains,
yeah, it's wild.
It's absolutely insane that they allowed that man to go through that, and they did. So there, I mean, it's just different, but
and he's better for it.
He is. Yeah, sure. Jake. Yeah, Jake Blake put it here. I think Jake returning, I think that's almost a given at this point. I think he should return. I think it makes sense for him to return. But Sophie B is the only one right now where I'm saying, hey, she's good TV. I think Alex has potential. But right now, I feel like Alex, I said this last week when I had Sam on the podcast, I feel like his confessionals and his screen time is very circumstantial.
Blake saying no to Alex.
Blake's just down on Alex. He's been down on him since he said Margarita. The thing with Alex is I think it's been circumstantial. He's on the disaster tribe. He goes on the journey at the beginning for the get your supplies. And then he also is the one who gets the idol. What has Alex really said that hasn't been circumstantial? Not much. Whereas Sophie B, I feel like has.
Yeah, sure.
So
he seems just sort of plain. He's
did
fine.
Did you see his hot take though? It was so good.
What was his hot take? I didn't see it. I'm not sure.
I agree with Blake. Blake's been complaining about this nonstop. Literally.
She's like, oh, okay.
But yeah. Had to remove Blake. Pretty really thought that something happened to Blake.
I was like, oh, Blake just left? That's wild. All right.
Because you can't see him behind stage. So you didn't even know he was still there.
But he said something about the margarita curse is over, blown, bottom us up.
What? I think he's the only one who knew it was a margarita curse, but Blake has just been roasting poor Alex since he said that. Alex just wants
what is the margarita curse?
Whoever gets the margarita gets voted out next at the auction. If you get the margarita at the auction, you get voted out next every time.
Really? Is that a thing?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. Flipping, maybe?
Now you have a content for
new video next Friday.
They just have to watch every single auction and make sure it doesn't go against anything.
Wow, okay.
All right, Radium, what do you have coming up?
Just Survivor videos. Honestly, not much going on outside of that. You know, same old at this point. Not talking about Survivor 49 too much, but maybe in the future when we get to 50, who knows? But yeah, just Survivor. I talked explosive fights that happened on the show. I'm going to be talking about petty fights. I had a good time going over all those. I missed a couple on Vanuatu. Somebody pointed out that. I was like, oh, shit. I forgot about, like, Mia. It was super random. But,
the early season Women's Tribe is electric.
I'll have to do more of that. Another petty fight. So this is fun. So fun to just stitch together.
Did you put Twyla in there, though, when she just gets in a fight with everybody?
I might have missed Vanuatu completely from my recollection because I was going over it. And I'm like, I think I just, like, skipped a season.
Oh, God.
I have, like, all of them. Somebody left me a note. It was like, hey, make sure you include these when you do more. Because I'm doing, like, all the petty fights in the show. And I've got all of them except I was like, oh, shit. Did I just, like, leave Vanuatu off? That's crazy. Especially the Women's Tribe. Just Survivor videos. You know, same old, same old. It's going to be a smorgasbord of random Survivor stuff coming up. I'm gonna rank in, like, returning player seasons. That's coming up in a week or so.
That'll be tough for number one, huh?
Yeah, you know,
are you doing full returning or are you doing half and half?
All seasons with at least one returning player.
That'll be tough to pick
are included,
ones or one
including
and two.
Survivor Philippines, because they got Bruce. I will include it. Or not Survivor Philippines, Survivor 45.
Yeah, I was gonna say Survivor Philippines did not have Bruce.
Yeah. So like, yeah, I'm gonna include it. I'm not putting Heroes versus Villains at number one.
You're gonna put Fans versus Favors then? Oh wait, don't spoil it.
I mean, maybe it's, I don't know, if you're an hour and a half deep at this point, maybe you deserve that. Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, if it's not one of those two seasons, I don't really know where you're going with this. So are we gonna put Caramel?
You gotta watch the video.
Okay, Caramel in number one.
Game changers, man.
I actually don't know if you all realize this. Peridium thinks Edge of Extinction and Redemption Island are the two best twists in the history of the show. So those will be his Redemption Island, Edge of Extinction, and then South Pacific, 1, 2, 3.
If they just had 18 Boston Robs on a season, that's like, that's just content. That's good vibes.
Dude, fire. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you so much, Peridium. Always a pleasure. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. I'll be back 11 a.m. with Eric Reichenbach on Sunday. John and McKenna are going to be doing Survivor Rewind, I think, tonight. Amazing Race stuff going on with McKenna and Kyle. And then on Monday, there was a bit of a scheduling mishap that happened last week with Matt Chat. So Tegwith wasn't able to get it done at that time, but she will be back on Monday. I'm not sure what time and I'm not sure who with, but I know she's back on Monday. So stay tuned. Keep in touch with us. I don't know. What the hell am I saying? Go follow us on social media. That's what I meant to say. Anyway, I'm out of here. Thank you all so much for making it this far. Like this video, subscribe. I said that already. Hey, I figured out how to get into Spotify on the back end. So now if you comment or subscribe on Spotify, I can interact with you there. That makes me happy. Also, so much hate. I didn't know that we were getting hate on Spotify. I would have known that. I probably would have stopped promoting our Spotify. Anyway, bye, everybody.
See ya.